Everyone knows the feeling of finally enjoying a day off, completely out of the house and just relaxing. But imagine being out at lunch and suddenly getting a notification that a window shattered at a house just a few miles away. It's the ultimate wake-up call, the idea that everything can change in a single second. Nobody wants to feel that kind of vulnerability when you're away from your home, and ADT ensures that protection is always active. Their systems are built for those exact high-stakes moments, with continuous 24/7 monitoring. Right from day one, homeowners can relax because the entire system can be professionally installed by trained technicians. ADT provides the most company-operated monitoring centers in the industry, and the ADT Plus app lets anyone effortlessly keep tabs on their home from anywhere there is service. It delivers the urgent alerts needed to live life without constant worry. Don't wait to prepare a home for an emergency. When every second counts, count on ADT. Visit ADT.com or call 1-800-ADT-ASAP.
In today's Q&A episode, Maurice will be answering your voicemail questions. If you haven't called the voicemail line yet, but you'd like to, the number is 770-545-6411. Hey guys, if you didn't catch it in our last episode, we're currently holding a contest. We're giving away 5 framed Up and Vanish posters from framebridge.com. To enter this contest, all you have to do is rate the podcast on iTunes and write a review. We'll be randomly selecting 5 people from the reviews on iTunes to get one of these fancy framed Up and Vanish posters from framebridge.com. So if you want one, just rate and write a review on iTunes and you'll automatically be entered in the contest.
Hi, I'm a listener in Maryland with a few questions. My biggest question is, what was the explanation given by the owner of the Expedition that was burned at Snapdragon Road? What was his explanation for having his vehicle parked there when he wasn't there at the time? Another question I have is about the cell phone records of Tara. I know they know a lot about Keith Dykes calling and all these messages and other text messages that she sent throughout the night. But, you know, what was her last call? Did someone call, you know, and ask her to meet up with them? Or I just wish there was more information on her cell phone and, you know, where it was pinging from, you know, calls that she was receiving or pinging from, that kind of thing. And finally, something that Dr. Godwin said on the last Q&A was he mentioned that Joe, the neighbor, had Tara's car detailed on Wednesday after she went missing. Unless I heard that incorrectly, why would somebody have her car detailed after she went missing? That seems so bizarre, and I wonder why that was the decision made by Joe. I look forward to you coming back for season 2. Thank you.
The only thing I could decipher in my investigation back in 06 and on to today, I don't have access to the case files. None of us do, but he said that he was house sitting. Now, there's been some postings on various type of websites saying that he wasn't, that his wife was had a key or something to do a little cleaning. But it's my understanding that he was supposed to be house sitting for the lady who owned the place who lived in Florida, the elderly lady. In regards to the cell phone records, as far as the pings and the official records, the GBI has those, never been able to get hold of them. I was told that I would be given the records back in March of 06. It never happened. I never was given the records, which would have helped me. Tara's records, I was told that, not anyone else's. That would have helped me immensely, but they were never given to me. In regards to Joe washing the car after that Monday, it's my understanding that his reason was is about the fingerprint powder. Tara had a very, fairly expensive sports car, and it was white, and so he said he had it cleaned, washed because of the fingerprint powder, is my understanding. But a lot of people, and that is, view that suspicious. I view it suspicious too. Thank you very much for the question.
Hey, this is Tamara from Illinois. I've been listening to your podcast, and I actually had to listen to all the episodes again, and something really struck me in episode 5 about the black truck and just about Tara in general. You know, I was kind of approaching it as it being a possible male suspect, someone she could be romantically linked with also. But as I listened more and more and re-reviewed the audio, it just appears to me that there's a female involvement in this. You know, there was a partially broken necklace in Tara's home by her, you know, in her bedroom. It does appear like a struggle happened. It is very possible the struggle happened and a female would have went to go make the bed or to kind of stage the room as if to show that no struggle had occurred. That black truck kind of hit me too, because I was thinking about the fact that it could have been the wife or girlfriend of someone that Tara may have been possibly romantically involved with or been rumored to be involved with. Jealousy could have played a part in there, and then he could have been a part of it in the sense of helping to clean up the scene or to hide Tara's body if that's what happened. But to me, the overall feel of it is that this was perpetrated by a female, and I don't know if you all have pursued it. You know, Tara was highly involved in pageants, and it could be a possibility that there was someone who was jealous if she did assist a particular pageant girl, and that girl won. There could be some jealousy on that. So, you know, just if you have the inclination, if you wouldn't mind just kind of taking a look at the women that kind of surround Tara, I think it might be worth your while. Thank you.
It's very possible that a female could be involved, but there's no evidence to suggest that. The DNA on the glove is a full profile of a white male. If a female is involved, then their accomplice, the male accomplice, we do not know who that is. In regards to the scene and the bedroom and the necklace, a male could easily pull a necklace off as a female could. So I don't really see a black truck, which I'm the one that found the information about the black truck. I don't see a black truck being linked to a female as much as I do a male. So, I mean, one could be in the background of this, but I'm just not convinced, because if there was one involved, as I said, we don't know who the male accomplice is, because so far there's been no DNA match. Thank you very much.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around waiting for the track to dry is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Here's something you may not know. Only 14% of cancers in the U.S. are caught through routine screenings. Prenuvo's whole body MRI may help close that gap. Screening for over 500 conditions, including most solid tumors, all in under an hour. Prenuvo's body panels also test over 80 biomarkers for a deeper understanding of your health. No radiation, no contrast. Book your scan at prenuvo.com. That's prenuvo.com.
Hi, my name is Ian. I'm listening from Boston, Mass. My question is if you guys have ever considered or thought about or have a theory on how many people might be involved, if you think it's one or multiple. I mean, my theory is that it might have been one person with multiple people covering it up, but I didn't know if there was a theory that either of you guys had on that. And then the second thing would be if we know anything about the connection between Dykes and the police department in Ocilla, if there was a positive relationship or no relationship or maybe even a bad relationship between those two. Thank you. Appreciate the podcast. Take care. Bye.
That's a good question. GBI has swabbed many people and the main persons of interest. They've polygraphed a lot of them. They've checked their alibis. with no DNA match, with no fingerprint match to the partial print, and passing the polygraph doesn't seem to be able to clear anyone. So it may be that thinking, well, the DNA, one of these persons of interest could be involved, but they had accomplice. So, and they don't know who that person is. So that might be the DNA of the white male that's on the glove, the accomplice. That might be one of the reasons why some of these other people has never been cleared. Again, thank you for listening to the podcast.
Hi, this is Corey from Fayetteville, Arkansas. I'm wondering, in one of the first episodes, there was mention of, I think it was a pearl necklace that was scattered on the floor of Tara's house. And I'm wondering if it was confirmed by anyone if she was wearing that necklace that night at the cookout. Because if she was, obviously that would place her in the house and give credence to any sort of scuffle that might have happened. Thanks a lot. Keep up the good work.
It's always been reported that the necklace that Tara had on, and there's a picture of it, that she had on at the pageant, and that she had on at the barbecue. This necklace she had made, she had gone to the arts and crafts store and got some supplies, and she had made a necklace out of one that was one of her family members that had been passed down to her. And that was the part of the necklace that was found on the floor the next day after she went missing. I think it was found on Tuesday, on the scattered on the floor. So yes, this has always been reported in the media that they're the same necklace, and that it was found on the parts of it was found on the floor. And I also found, now I don't know if it's related to this particular necklace, but during my search of her bedroom, I found a clasp that you hooked the necklace, and that had been pulled apart. And there's a picture on my blog about that, showing that clasp, and that was turned over. It was collected back and turned over to the GBI in March of 06. Thank you for the question.
I use stamps.com to simplify my life. I actually can't remember the last time I went to the post office, and that's a good thing. I use stamps.com for Up and Vanished to communicate with people. I'm also using it to send out all your cool rewards from the Kickstarter. Stamps.com is also going to be a pivotal part of the new merch store we're making. Pretty much without it, I'd have to go to the post office. And I'd also have to pay more money. Two things that I don't plan on doing. That means trips to the post office, not to mention the lines or the crowd. But thanks to Stamps.com, you just don't have to worry about that. You can use Stamps.com to automatically calculate and print the correct amount of postage for every letter or package you send. Stamps.com brings all the services of the U.S. Postal Service right to your fingertips. You can buy and print U.S. postage for any letter, any package, any class of mail, period. All right from your desk. Stamps.com makes it easy. They'll send you a digital scale to automatically calculate the exact postage. Stamps.com will even help you decide the best class of mail to use, so you're not wasting your money. And speaking of money, Stamps.com saves you money. That's because they get postage discounts that you can't get at the post office, including 3 cents off every first-class stamp. Anything you do at the post office, you can now do it from your desk. And not to mention, you'll never have to go to the post office again. Right now, you can use my code UP for a special offer, a 4-week trial that includes postage and a digital scale. Just go to stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top, and type in UP, U-P. That's stamps.com, promo code UP, and you'll never go to the post office again.
Hi, this is Jennifer. I'm calling from Ackworth, Georgia. I've been listening to the podcast from the beginning, and I don't remember hearing anybody say that there's a possibility that Tara might actually still be alive. There's no body, and I know it seems like she may have been murdered, but is there any possibility that she's alive somewhere, maybe being held, or maybe somewhere where she doesn't want to be found? Thanks. Bye.
I guess anything's possible in any case. In this case, I don't think so. There's been no financial activity since October when she disappeared that Saturday. There's been no use of the Social Security card. And then her father had her declared dead in 2010, and she was declared dead. I seriously doubt that she's alive. No way to sustain herself. or anything like that. Thank you for the question.
I'm a listener from Atlanta. My question is about this latex glove that is being beat to death, but I'm a paramedic in the area, and I was wondering if you guys know if the glove was inside out, because I know when somebody takes off a glove, it turns inside out, or if it was just, kind of fallen there like it hadn't been used yet. So thanks for answering. See you. Bye.
Looking at some of the photographs that were shown on the 48 Hours show, which were actually filmed by 48 Hours at the GBI, where Rothwell was showing some of the 8x10 photographs, you really can't tell. You could tell the color of it, white or offish white, but you can't tell really if the glove was turned inside out or not. Because if you blow it up or enlarge it, it becomes too blurry. But that would be an interesting fact to know, that if it was just dropped or if it was turned inside out. Thank you very much for the question.
Hi, my name is Ellie, and I'm a listener from the Houston area. And I had a theory that I wanted to share about the conundrum of the latex glove. What if the perpetrator had unknowingly dropped the glove in Tara's yard during the night of her disappearance? Let's hypothesize that the perpetrator had connections with law enforcement, and word got back to the perpetrator that a latex glove had been found in Tara's yard. As that glove would obviously implicate the perpetrator, he replaced the original latex glove with a plant. This glove exchange would have happened when the glove was in Osceola PD custody. I know the glove is forensically linked to Tara, but the perpetrator would have had access to Tara's body and could have made sure to link the planted glove to Tara so that the planted glove would be assumed to be the original glove. This theory would make sense with the conflicts about the color of the glove and the fact that the DNA on the glove has never been traced to anyone. So I'm curious as to whether this could be a valid theory and would love to hear Dr. Godwin's thoughts. Thanks.
Interesting theory. The only problem with it is if the person was in law enforcement and they realized that the glove that was on the ground, I mean, that they had dropped the glove and it was later switched out by the law enforcement person. You said that because the glove is like forensically linked back to Tara somehow, that they had access to the body. And the problem with that is that even after that Monday, like on Wednesday, supposedly where the glove was at in the police department, and I don't know that that's actually accurate or not, but let's assume that person would have to take the glove back to where the body was at, get the DNA of her on the glove with the unknown DNA so it wouldn't be linked to them, and carry it back and put it back in there. Now, you're also dealing not just with DNA. You're also dealing with a partial print. So now you've got what you consider the original glove that's been destroyed and replaced with one with Tara's DNA on it and an unknown male DNA on it and a partial print. That's very difficult to pull off. But it's an interesting theory you had there, but I don't think that happened at all. Thank you very much for the question.
The GLP-1 pill you've been waiting for is now on Roe. Yep, it's finally here. With the same clinically proven ingredient, now in a pill, and now on Roe. It's the first FDA-approved GLP-1 pill for weight loss. At the lowest price available, that's one daily GLP-1 pill for big results. Now on Roe. Go to roe.co/listen to see if you qualify. RX only. Go to roe.co/safety for serious side effects and boxed warning associated with GLP-1s.
How would you like to live in a home where the floors are always clean? Now you can with Matic, the first intuitive cleaning robot designed and assembled in America for families like yours. Matic sees your home the way you do, so it cleans the way you would. Precise visual navigation means it moves gracefully through real lived-in spaces and almost never gets stuck. Its visual intelligence means you can point at a mess and say, Matic, clean this. Matic also understands over 75 languages, so anyone can use it just by talking to it, even the kids and the grandparents. Nobody has to learn another app. It vacuums and mops daily. It's quiet enough to run at night and can clean in the dark, so you can wake up to clean floors. Matic is rated 4.9 out of 5 by the families who own it. To get your Matic, go to maticrobots.com. That's maticrobots.com and get a year's supply of free HEPA bags with your purchase today. Go to maticrobots.com/odyssey, a $96 value at no cost to you. That's maticrobots.com/AUDACY.
Something is happening in Dawson Creek. A wave of violence has swept over this community of just 13,000 people.
It's like the kind of stuff you only hear about on TV.
15 murders in the last 5 years.
Some criminals, I put them into the category of supervillains.
I'm Timothy Sawa, and from CBC's Uncover and the Fifth Estate, an investigation into deaths and disappearances in Dawson Creek and what's behind it all.
I'm not saying another word. Leave me alone.
The Mile Zero Murders, available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, Payne. I'm a listener from San Francisco, and I've really enjoyed the podcast. I just had a sort of theory slash question for you, which is something I thought about the other day when I was trying to locate my cell phone is that one of the reasons that you would call a cell phone 30 times in one day is because you're trying to find that cell phone. Has anyone thought about the fact that one of the reasons he might have called that phone over and over is if he had been with Tara the night before for any reason and had thought that she might have her cell phone on her and was desperately trying to find it so that he could get rid of it for some reason? I don't know. It's just a theory that I thought of. If somebody didn't know her cell phone was sitting there in her home and they thought it was with her and something happened to her, they might be trying to find the phone. So the phone couldn't be used to find her if it was on her person using Find My Phone, right? Okay, just a thought. Thanks.
Very good question. And I've not heard this one before. The only problem with that is if he's calling the phone trying to find the phone, then he is pinging his phone in the same general area. Now, there are some criminals that do this, and it's they're sitting in prison. This is a seasoned detective, and he would know better than that. Now, there's a possible way around that, is that a person could be using a burner phone, and the phone that you actually made the phone calls with, you know, would be the actual phone with his number, and then the burner phone was used some other way. But I just don't see it, because him calling the cell phone, now he could have been calling the phone standing outside of the house Sunday night when he was there. He could have called it several times to see if it was ringing inside. I mean, I don't know that happened. But to see if he lost it, where it was at, so the pings wouldn't be used to show the general location of the body, that would implicate him, because his phone would be pinging in the general area. And if he's calling her phone is pinging in the same area. You definitely do not want that in a missing murder case. So I very seriously doubt that happened. Thank you very much for the good question.
Hello, love the show, love the podcast. Question regarding the case file. You can't Tara's family petition the court to declare her legally dead? And if so, since this isn't a murder case, wouldn't that just close that file and allow you then or anyone access to those files to do some additional digging? Thanks so much.
It's an interesting question. She was declared dead in 10. By her father. Does that make the case closed? Absolutely not. Is this a missing person case? Absolutely. Is this a murder case? 99.9% or more that this is a homicide case. And it's been treated for over 10 years, although still missing person officially, it's been treated as a homicide case. It is an active, open investigation with sensitive information, sensitive people's information. So, yes, the family could hire a lawyer, and this has been done by families, and they could petition the court and have a hearing, and a judge could say, hey, you've not moved this thing forward. the family wants to bring in a private investigator or whatever, and they need access to the files. Would the judge rule like that against the Georgia open records law? That's doubtful. If it was a 25-year-old case, you may have a little bit more, a stronger case to do that. That's never been explored in this case about trying to get the case files by the family. Good question, and thank you for listening to the podcast.
My name's Drew, big fan, calling from Destin, Florida. Just with everything you've said about how the GBI has been handling the case and whatnot, I was just curious why the FBI hasn't stepped in, given that it is a missing persons case, and there's allegations of mishandling of evidence with the chain of custody and everything. I think there's enough precedence for their jurisdiction in this case. Just wondering if they've had anything to do with it.
Thank you very much for asking a question and listening to the podcast out of Florida. The FBI really can't get involved in the case unless they're across state lines, and there's no evidence that there's any state lines that's been crossed in this case. We don't know where she's at. Also, they have to be asked in by the state, by the investigative agency. That in jurisdiction of the case was turned over from Mesilla PD to the GBI, and it's been their case since that Monday in 2005. For the FBI to come in, they would have to be asked to come in by the GBI. Will that happen? Not unless there's something of hers that is found in, say, in Florida or South Carolina or some other state, and they probably could ask them to come in to do some things. But I don't think that the FBI would be asked in into this case. Thank you very much.
Hey guys, thanks for listening. As a reminder, episode 13 comes out on February 27th. But before that, there'll be a bonus case evidence this coming Monday. And don't forget about our contest either. We're giving away 5 framed Up and Vanish posters from framebridge.com. To enter, all you have to do is rate and write a review of Up and Vanish on iTunes. We're picking 5 random people out of all the reviews. I also want to give a special thanks to Resonate Recordings for editing and mixing today's episode. They specialize in podcast editing and production. If you're looking to improve the quality of your podcast or start a podcast of your own, check them out at resonaterecordings.com. Thanks, guys, and I'll see you Monday.